Broadcasting from the Gulag city of Planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer and our guest. Nicholas Iyer will be with us here in just a few moments. But first, I just want to talk to you about something I did today. I actually went to the city council and started Project Houstredam. We talked about it briefly here on the show. Project Houstredam basically says we're going to educate our elected officials, our mayor and our city council, with the ultimate goal starting with one incremental change, and that is to stop arresting people for marijuana. Don't you think it's kind of silly that we do that? What we've done with these urine tests, my friends, is create a real and valid, if you will, gateway theory. What we've done is tell the kids and anybody actually out there doing marijuana that no, don't do that. You must do heroin to be a good citizen here in these United States. And why do I say that? Well, basically it deals with the fact that we, and I mean all of us, that includes you, my friend, we perpetuate this system that says, well, we're going to test people for drugs, and you know what? Marijuana stays in your system for 30 days or more sometimes. Whereas if I was a heroin addict, I could do it today, and day after tomorrow, I could pass a test with flying colors. I wouldn't even need to go buy any of that kidney rinse, you know? It's that obvious, my friends, that we've been schnookered. It's time to take back the ground that belongs to us, this common sense and reason, you know, that is ours, we the people and all that, if you know what I'm saying. Steve, do we have Nikki online? All right. Hey, are you there, Nikki?
I am, Dean. How are you?
I'm well, sir. A little bedraggled through the day here, but doing well. I think we're making some progress, and I hear you and our scheduled guest, Cliff Thornton, are making some progress up there tonight. Tell us what you're doing.
Absolutely. Syracuse is, I'm calling from Syracuse, New York, or you're calling me or whatever.
Yes, sir.
I'm talking from Syracuse, New York, and Syracuse, New York is a test market, has been for years. It's a sort of typical Rust Belt Northeast city, about a little under 500,000 people in the general area around here. And we have a very interesting situation. A couple of months ago, the city auditor, after 6 months of working closely with Reconsider on this, put out a report looking at the amount of police department resources devoted to enforcing drug prohibition. And the numbers are high, and he issued the report recommending that the numbers are disproportionate, that their activities actually serve to increase a lot of the crime and violence and tensions in the neighborhoods, and the city should look seriously at decriminalizing drugs and giving the police better tasks to perform, and he recommended that the Common Council hold hearings on this. At about the same time, we had a situation where the mayor invited the feds in to prosecute some people that they claim were in a gang selling marijuana, and they asked the feds to come in and use the RICO statutes, racketeering influenced corrupt organization laws. And these young men, many of whom are guilty by association, are being prosecuted and face perhaps life imprisonment for many of them for basically marijuana sales, and some of them even for being, you know, the cousin of a marijuana salesman or something like that.
It's just outrageous, isn't it?
It's outrageous. And all this came together at the same time, and the community is very upset about these RICO prosecutions, and there's a wonderful minister here in town, Reverend Larry Ellis, who has organized the community and held meetings. The meetings are growing like crazy in numbers, and recently the Common Council has agreed to hold those hearings in May.
But, you know, the regular listeners here to the Cultural Baggage Show are aware of a very strong similar instance. Last week we had George Martirano on here, man who's, as he says, going on 22 years of imprisonment for marijuana possession. I mean, it was over a ton. But he's been in there for over 21 years, and he has life without possibility of parole. And, you know, It's just insane that, you know, murderers, rapists, my God, serial killers probably get out in less time.
No, they definitely do. But, you know, the mandatory sentences, the long sentences, it's a terrible thing. But this is, to my knowledge, and I may be wrong. If anybody knows of any other instances, call me. To my knowledge, this is the first time that a city government, in the person of the city auditor and the common council, have taken a look at this and said, you know, we have schools closing. We have busing issues. We need job training. We need after school programs. We need all sorts of things. There's no money for any of that. But come time to arrest people, well, all of a sudden there's millions of dollars around to arrest everybody that's committed a crime. And this is the first time that a city has said, hey, we need to look at this because we can't afford this.
Doesn't
the homicide rate is skyrocketing in this town. Crime is increasing. And the only remedy seems to be reactive. We'll go and arrest people when they commit a crime. There's nothing spent on anything preventative.
I listened to some of the congressional investigations, went on, I think, a week and a half ago. And basically, they were saying that, yes, their policy does support Osama bin Laden, but let's just, you know, throw more money into it. You know, the $3 heroin on the East Coast, I understand. Osama bin Laden still making millions, and yet they want to, you know, do everything they can to subsidize his effort.
Right. Yeah, they seem, first of all, I think most of that heroin money that they're talking about, the heroin from there, I think mostly goes to Afghanistan, I mean to Europe.
Well, that may well be. But...
So I think it's a sort of little less direct than they're making it sound. But, you know, what's interesting, they always say it's drug profits that are funding terrorism. But I don't think there's money from Merck or from Sandoz or Bayer or any of that drug money that's going into funding Al-Qaeda. I think it's illegal drug money. In other words, money generated by the black market, by prohibition, that's funding those people.
No, so true, Nick. Nick, I tell you what. We have, here in Houston, you know, the scheduled Breaking the Chains conference. I don't know if you or any of the folks from Reconsider are going to be able to make it, but it portends to be a major event for this city, which so desperately needs to change their policy. Your thoughts in that regard? Have you been to any of the prior Breaking the Chains conferences?
Well, I have not. I personally have not. But I've heard other people who have, and it's a very good thing. It's you know, these are all important issues, and it would be, I'd like to share. These things have all happened in Syracuse very recently, and I would love to share some of what's going on here with people so that this can be replicated. I think this can happen around the country. People, you know, this is a time when cities are operating on very tight budgets. I'm sure everybody knows that their city is financially stressed at the moment. This is the time to question what they're spending their money on.
Sure, Nicky, I do want you to go into that, and I want to tell you, too, that we are trying to push this effort with all the shows that listen to the Drug Truth and the 420 Drug War News to do the same, or do something as best they can in their locale, you know, to impact their local government. Please, tell us what's happening up there in Syracuse.
Well, I think we have we've got hearings scheduled with the Common Council looking at how the city is spending money, and they're looking at what alternatives they could come up with that are legal for a municipality to do that would save them money. And at the same time, I'm thinking that they are probably going to several cities did it in regard to the Patriot Act and our invasion of Iraq. They make a sort of statement.
Yes. I do know what you're talking
about. Legally binding. I can't think of the phrase now for these things. We are hoping that they will issue some sort of a statement that basically says, look, the city of Syracuse cannot continue to fund your drug prohibition, and it is causing a lot of problems in our city, generating crime and violence, and we're sort of putting you on notice that we don't like it and you should change it. And in the meantime, we're going to do certain things, hopefully deprioritize marijuana. It was in the police department as a policy, and you know, other things like that that might change things. The newspaper, the only newspaper in town, did an editorial after the city auditor's report that was entitled "Where's Plan B?" And basically what they said was that after 30 years of Plan A, which is the drug war, it's failed, and we need to look at Plan B. The you know, they said it's time to start stop talking tough on crime and start acting smarter on crime.
Sure, we can't just lock it up, everybody that's ever done drugs. I mean, we'd have to build prisons forever, I suppose.
Well, it's ridiculous. And, you know, we should have learned from alcohol prohibition. I mean, this is something that we've done already. We've been through this. You know, the prohibition of alcohol should have taught society that making substances illegal leads to bootlegging, violence, organized crime, robberies, homicides. Once the criminal element, you know, disappeared, the violence connected with the distribution system also disappeared.
Yeah, yeah. Our grandparents learned a smart lesson. It seems we could parallel that course.
They didn't pass it on very well, I guess, because we're still in this,
yes,
you know, in this same mode.
Well, I want to alert the listeners out there. We are speaking with Mr. Nicholas Isle. He's the co-founder and executive director of Reconsider, and that's on the web at reconsider.org. We're going to take a little break in just a second here, but first I want to alert the listeners out there on the Drug Truth Network. I know it's difficult. I know it takes a little courage to get before your city council and say what you got to say. I want to read just a little bit of what I read to the Houston City Council today. Like Oakland, California, we want to change the focus on medical marijuana. We want doctors to recommend, compassion clubs to grow, and patients to use and benefit from medical marijuana. The UK no longer arrests anybody for simple possession. Canada grows marijuana for their patients. Last week, the people of Oakland planted 500,000 marijuana seeds in front of City Hall. And, you know, it can be done. And I'm hoping that here in the Houston area and everybody on the Drug Truth Network will get in touch with me. Let's make this happen in our own locale. The federal congressional people will get the idea sooner or later, but we can make a change in our own area. Steve, go ahead and run those tracks, would you?
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
Okay, we're back. Nikki, if you would, you know, you guys up there are making some changes. You're daring to stand up and say it out loud, and I want to commend you for that. And I wonder if you, I don't know, talk to my listeners. Tell them it's okay. It's okay to do something about this situation.
Well, it's certainly okay. I think there's a lot less negative consequences from speaking up about this stuff than people think. And I think it's something to understand that it's a very conservative issue. It really is. We speak to hundreds of Rotary clubs and civic organizations every year, speaking to thousands, tens of thousands of people all over the East Coast. And most of those people are quite conservative, and we've realized that this is a conservative issue. There's not a Rotary we speak to where a half a dozen people don't join Reconsider and donate something or sign up for something.
Tell us a little.
It's a conservative issue. I mean, it's an issue of freedom. It's an issue of, you know, if people, conservatives, call themselves conservatives and they believe in less government, then what is the government doing examining your urine, for instance?
Indeed.
You know, it's a very conservative issue.
That was one of the points I made today, is that if there is a gateway theory, it is urinalysis. It is the urinalysis that makes kids go from marijuana to hard drugs, because they're not going to get caught after a weekend of use for using those hard drugs. But if they use marijuana, hell, they got a whole month before they'll test clean.
Well, that's true. There's certainly an argument to be made for that. Maybe urinalysis is the gateway theory. I don't know. It resonates. It's an issue that resonates, I think, generally much better with conservative groups than liberal groups. They're an easier sell. I mean, they really get it. It's a matter of individual responsibility. If they are true conservatives, if they are conservatives of the libertarian Barry Goldwater kind of conservative, real honest American conservatives, then they have no problem with it. If they're of the, say, Orrin Hatch variety, who want to tell you how to live your life, and it better be awfully like their life, then it's harder.
Yeah. Well, now, Bill Bennett wants you to live a certain life, but it sure doesn't want it to be like his.
Right. Eat a lot and gamble. That's good for you.
Well, it must be good for him, I suppose. Nicholas, you address reconsider, and I think a lot of folks maybe don't know that much about it. I think you guys are a wonderful resource. Many excellent articles I've read over the years and so forth. Tell them more about that resource of information.
Well, we do a lot of things. We're a small organization, but we've been around for years. We were founded in the early 90s, and we've been working diligently ever since. We've accomplished quite a bit of things. If you go to our website, you can sign up for the Reconsider Tidbits, which is, I sort of distill all the news that comes on my computer screen from all over the world, and pick out one or two interesting items once, maybe twice a week, maybe every couple of weeks, sort of loose and irregular, but we found that there are a lot of people who are interested in drug policy, a lot of people who donate to us, who are involved with us, but they're not that interested in drug policy, probably unlike most of the people who listen to your show, Dean.
Right.
There are a lot of people out there who have an interest, but they don't want to wade through 20 items from, the wonderful DRCNet and MAP and, there's other lists, with all kinds of massive amounts of information. They don't want that. Every couple of weeks they get a little thing on their, computer that just has something interesting that, it's related to drug policy. It keeps them informed and aware, gives them interesting stuff to talk about at, dinner parties.
Well, I'll say this, it's infrequent enough that it always gets my attention. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's true. That's another thing.
Good,
we also have
pearls
a website that's kind of interesting, and we do a lot of things. We used to publish a quarterly publication. Some issues are still online in PDF format. Pretty detailed examinations of drug education and law enforcement and just go browse around. You'll find out much more and much better from looking at our website than I can tell you.
Now, I see, I took a little tour of your website. You guys have a speakers list just full of really, really intelligent and knowledgeable people. And if you would, kind of talk about that speakers bureau, some of the folks you have on staff.
Well, we're lucky to have a wonderful guy, Mike Smithson, who runs our speakers bureau. We kind of pioneered that in the area of drug policy reform, and we've always tried to have not pro-drug speakers as much as anti-prohibition speakers.
Sure.
So again, we're trying to sell this to a pretty conservative audience. And we found out a long time ago, and I guess you may disagree on this, but we found out that in our experience, it's much harder to convince people that drugs are good than it is to convince them that prohibition is bad. They grew up hearing horror stories about drug use. I admit they're wrong, but nevertheless, that's what they heard. heard it over and over from every source, in school and church and family, and everybody was on this. You know, we've had this drug war, drug prohibition going on for 30, 40, 50, 60, 80 years, whatever, depending on when you start the clock. It's a mess. And this stuff is pretty ingrained, this propaganda.
Oh, yeah.
So they've also had ingrained into them the idea that prohibition was a failure. It's the only constitutional amendment ever to be repealed. They know that. So when you go in and try and explain to them that prohibition doesn't work, well, that's something they can get around a lot easier than say marijuana is good for you.
Well,
so it may be, and I think there are certain audiences you can say that, but you know, you go into a Rotary someplace.
To be honest with you, Nick, I would love the opportunity to discuss it with them, because anyway, that's another issue. Now, you stop and think about it for a minute. We have, what is it, 2.1 million U.S. citizens in jail now. This war has escalated four times what it was about 20 years ago. What has happened in that 20-year span? What has caused this escalation?
I think there's a lack of attention paid to this by the media. I generally blame the press for much of what's going on. They don't cover this issue.
A malaise, huh?
Remotely well. They ignore stuff constantly. I mean, you know, with all the attention and all the news stories paid to interdicting drugs at our borders, there was nothing that I saw in any U.S. source about what happened, what the Dutch did, what, a week ago. They legalized the smuggling of cocaine. I mean, you don't think that would be of interest to somebody here who's concerned about drugs and the drug issues? I mean, it didn't make the papers here.
Well, I don't think that
I don't know if your listeners are aware of this, but very briefly, the Dutch, very pragmatic people apparently, they looked at a quick reckoning of how many people they arrested at the borders for cocaine smuggling. I think it was some 7,000 or 8,000, as I recall. They looked at how much it cost, at how much it cost to try them, imprison them, etc. Then they looked at how much cocaine they interdict by this. They found maybe at best estimates were like 15%. And they said, gee, that's not worth it. Let's change the law. That's a waste of time.
And certainly it is.
They changed the law. They said if you are caught at the border with less than 3 kilos, which is 6.6 pounds of cocaine, the punishment is we confiscate the cocaine and you walk.
Very pragmatic.
Why should we spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars keeping some guy in jail? There's another guy with more cocaine on the next plane. What is this accomplishing? It's just costing us a lot of money. So let's just confiscate the cocaine and throw these guys out.
Well, and did they not just recently allow the dispensation through legal pharmacies, medical marijuana, as well?
Yes. And, of course, we all know about the regular marijuana that's available in coffee shops.
Sure.
You know, there are a lot of countries that are moving in this direction. I think it was Brazil that just passed something in their house making prison not an option for drug possession. There are all kinds of reforms going on everywhere. None of this is covered by the paper. So people assume, the average American assumes, that everybody in the world is interested in incarcerating everybody that smokes a joint.
That's
not true.
In many countries in Central and South America, it is legal to possess personal amounts. It's when you start trafficking that you get in trouble.
That's right.
And, you know, it's only in the United States that we want to put everybody who has ever had any in prison for as long as we possibly can.
Well, it's not only in the United States.
Well,
I think our allies in this kind of policy are other places,
Sweden,
like Sweden and Iraq, Iran,
Sudan, maybe.
Saudi Arabia, China. Every year they show the Chinese, for instance, here on in the American press, they show every year the Chinese executing drug dealers in some stadium that they have there.
And a kidney harvest, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And every year you see that. Now, I don't know I didn't see, again, I didn't see any press coverage of the statement a few weeks ago by the Chinese that stating that they have a major heroin problem and they have X million heroin addicts now in China. That didn't get any press.
Well, and the fact that we have 27 times the rate of heroin production in Afghanistan than we did under the Taliban with U.S. controls.
Right.
You know, that gets no press to speak of. I mean,
They keep talking about getting drugs off the streets. And they, you know, this government hasn't managed to keep, to build a federal prison or a state prison or any prison, maximum security prison, that isn't full of drugs. So how exactly are they going to keep it out of my neighborhood?
Oh, my. Well, Nikki, we got about 2 minutes left. I want to give you a chance to kind of wrap up, but let's remind folks of your website, and that is reconsider.org. Wonderful place to visit. Good data. I recommend everybody go there. Nikki, tell us what's happening this year. Where are you guys headed? What you going to do next?
Well, right now we're working on these hearings with the Common Council here, the City Council. They're scheduled, I think, for May. And we're busy drawing up a guest list and people to come and testify. And we're getting ready for that. We're, of course, also doing our speakers bureau and keeping up the website and whatever else we can do.
Well, you guys keep up the good work. I admire your longevity, your commitment, and your ability to get it done. And I thank you for all the work you do.
Thanks a lot. And I hope we can do this again sometime.
Well, I'm sure we will. And, you know, you just stay in touch, and I'll be looking for that reconsider tidbit next time I'm out.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, let's see. I want to wrap up a couple of things here. What do we got left there, Steve? I know that at least a few of you out there, you know that you can make a difference. You know things you can do. You know somebody that's a cop or an assistant district attorney or something. Talk to them. Tell them it's going to change. We don't want to embarrass them because they are the hypocrites in the long run, and we need to, take care of things. Now, I want to alert you that next week I'm going to bring in three medical marijuana patients that live right here in Houston, Texas, and we're going to talk about their maladies and how medical marijuana works for them, and I hope you'll join us. But next Tuesday morning, 10 to noon, Hitachi is giving me her time slot. I'm bringing in five good friends of Nicholas Iyer, our guest. They are members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and I'm going to take the rubber hose and the bright light to them, and I'm going to find out what they've been doing to us all this time. Because they're willing to tell us, and I hope you'll join us for that show as well. Steve tells me we got just about a half minute here, so I wanted to alert you to you can visit my website. That is unvarnishedtruth.org, and I'll keep you updated there. You can hear read my latest article in the Houston Free Press, and hook up with the good folks at Reconsider and others along the line. We need to stand tall. We need to work together, and we need to end this madness. But as always, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, so you got to be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the Unvarnished Truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT in Houston.